Thanks so much for joining us. It's great to be back. Gopher football will be played a little bit later today. Minnesota at Wisconsin, our pregame show beginning at 1:30. We've been preempted for weeks and weeks here on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. And joining me in the studio today, co-host Susan Rhodes. Susan, great to see you again.
Good to see you again, Steve. It's been a long time.
It has been. The weather was much, much warmer the last time we did a show together.
I think you were in Bermudas the last time I saw you.
More than likely. Not today, however. No. We have a very important topic today, and we have a very special guest attorney from Moss and Barnett.
We do. We have Nancy Kiskus with us today, who is a longtime partner of mine. And Nancy is my go-to person for two reasons. Number one, she knows an incredible wealth of knowledge about estate planning, trusts and wills, planning for disability and long-term illness, and all of those huge issues for our clients. She's also done every job at Moss and Barnett. So whenever I want to know how the firm runs, I go to Nancy. Nancy started with Moss and Barnett as a receptionist, and then she moved on to be a secretary, and then she moved on to be a paralegal, and then she moved on to be an associate attorney, and finally a full shareholder with the firm. So she truly knows how every aspect of it works.
So when we need to find out behind the scenes about you or Tom or John, we should actually talk to Nancy.
Call Nancy. She'll give you the straight scoop.
Very good. Well, on today's program, we do have a serious topic that impacts so many people.
We do, Steve. Alzheimer's is the topic today, and most of us in our families, with friends, with loved ones, with parents now, and with spouses, certainly have been touched by this disease. And it can be devastating to both the individual, of course, that's suffering from it, as well as the caregivers and the family. And Nancy, I know that you have both personal knowledge of this and also professional knowledge of it. And so I want to thank you for being here today to share with us. I'm wondering if you can start out by just telling us, what is Alzheimer's?
Alzheimer's is a disease that currently affects millions of Americans. Although we think of it usually as a senior's disease or someone that strikes the elderly, it can strike at any age. It affects the brain, and what it does is it affects someone's ability to remember things. The way it was explained to me was that your brain develops from the time you're an infant. You have just basic thinking skills, and your brain develops as you get older until you get into your late teens, early 20s. And that's when you have your highest level thinking skills. And then as we age, those thinking skills kind of reverse. And with Alzheimer's, they reverse very quickly.
That is a scary thought. I think even as we get into our age group and we see little things slip, so I can't imagine what it's like for that individual. Can you talk a little bit about what the life expectancy is of someone with this disease typically?
Typically, from the time of diagnosis, the life expectancy for someone with Alzheimer's is anywhere from 2 to 20 years, with the average being about 8 years.
And if I have someone that I think might have this, we say as a joke frequently, oh, it's just my Alzheimer's kicking in or whatever. And typically when we're slightly forgetful, we think of that. What are signs that you really should watch for in someone that would give you a clue?
The signs of Alzheimer's are usually come on very gradually. And you can make excuses for them. For example, your loved one may start to forget appointments or forget names, or they may have difficulty with numbers. They can no longer balance their checkbook, or they have trouble figuring the tip on a check at a restaurant. Oftentimes, they have trouble telling time on a traditional watch. They may have personality changes. They may become distrustful of family and friends. They can't follow a conversation as easily where there are lots of people involved. And people with Alzheimer's at first are very good at covering up. If they can't get their jacket zipped, they may say, well, this jacket, there's something wrong with the zipper. Let's get rid of it. You may notice differences in their driving habits. They stop for no reason, or they start to slow down, or they drive at inappropriate speeds, or they may miss stop signs or stoplights. But like I say, it comes on very gradually.
One of the things I've heard is that driving can really be a difficult issue. What have you seen in regards to that with clients?
We all take driving for granted, but when you think about driving, you're processing a lot of information at the same time. You're looking in front of you, behind you, you're looking to the side, you're keeping track of other drivers. You know, did a child just dart behind that parked car? And for someone with Alzheimer's, they're having trouble processing a lot of information at the same time. And so driving becomes very difficult.
If someone notices this in a loved one, or for that matter, in themselves, if they say, "Oh, that sounds like me," will a physician be able to generally do some tests? How does that process work once someone goes to see a doctor, and how is it diagnosed?
A doctor will do various tests to determine someone's ability to remember. They'll also do tests to rule out things like a brain tumor or a stroke or other illnesses. But they will be able to diagnose with nearly 90% certainty whether or not your loved one has Alzheimer's.
Nancy, the driving is always a concern for me, I think. And just having elderly parents, it can be a concern. But certainly in this instance, how do you know when it's not safe for someone with Alzheimer's to be driving?
That's a tough question. There are obviously liability issues involved when someone is driving when they shouldn't be. When you think about it, you know, there's the risk that the person could get lost, but I feel the greater risk is that by driving a car, they would hurt themselves or someone else. How do you get help? You know, it's not as easy as saying to your loved one, you know, I really don't think it's safe for you to drive anymore. Not too many people would take that comment well. What I would recommend is involving the person's doctor and say, could you please give us your assessment, tell us what you would recommend, and then there are driving tests that your doctor can require that your loved one take in order to determine whether they're still okay to drive, whether it's still safe for them to drive, or whether they need to have their license taken away.
Does the doctor have that authority in the case of Alzheimer's or any other condition in your experience? Is it possible for a doctor to say, look, you can't be driving, and I'm going to recommend to the state that your driving privileges be revoked?
It's my understanding that they do have that power.
Okay.
Yes.
Where would someone go for a test like that if they were worried?
Well, I'm very familiar with the test that Courage Center gives. And what they do is they do both an on-the-road test and also a test in kind of an office or a conference room setting where they're testing a person's ability to follow lots of things that might be happening at the same time. When they take them out on the road, they're in a car with someone who's testing them who also has a steering wheel and a brake. And they will, if certain things happen, they will automatically say that the person is not able to drive. They cannot take away the person's license, however. They issue their report, give it to the doctor, and then it's the doctor that issues a report to the state. And it's the state then that revokes the license.
We are going to take a break. We have much more on this topic, Alzheimer's, when we come back. If you or a loved one gets a diagnosis, what are the next steps you should take? By the way, your phone calls welcome on this topic as well at 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett. Susan Rode, co-chair of Moss and Barnett's Family Law Practice Group, joins us in studio, along with special guest attorney today, Nancy Kiskus of Moss and Barnett's Wealth Preservation and Estate Planning Practice Group. We're talking about dealing with the emotional and legal issues of Alzheimer's. Back to the driving for a moment, and this came up during the break. Liability issues associated with someone who may or may not be capable of driving anymore.
As a caregiver, if you know that your loved one has received this diagnosis of Alzheimer's and you know you've seen signs that you feel that maybe they should not be driving, you as the caregiver could possibly have some liability issues for keeping them from driving. If your loved one is driving and they're in an accident and they're, you know, and your loved one is perfectly in the right and the other person was totally in the wrong, you still have potential liability issues if, you know, a lawsuit is brought due to the accident. It's the liability issues are not clear, but it's a huge problem.
We had a call during the break, difference between Alzheimer's and dementia.
I am not a doctor, but it's my understanding that dementia is the broader term for someone who has some type of degenerative brain disease, and that Alzheimer's is just one of the forms of dementia.
And that could bring up legal and financial planning challenges as well, that it would probably fit into this category of some sort. Even if the diagnosis wasn't Alzheimer's, this would create legal and potential financial challenges for the family.
Absolutely.
And one other thought we wanted to touch on before we went to the phone calls. By the way, our phone number on the program, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. We talked about seeing a doctor and potentially getting a diagnosis or more advice on, is it Alzheimer's, is it something else? You have some specific recommendations before you see your physician.
Yes. When you go to see your doctor, I mean, typically your appointment is 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever. My strong recommendation is that you send a letter to your loved one's doctor ahead of the appointment, just stating specifically what your concerns are. What have you seen? A person with Alzheimer's will put on their best face when they go in to see the doctor, and they may seem just fine when they go in to see the doctor. But if you can send them a letter ahead of time saying not just he seems different or he seems forgetful, but list some of the very specific things you've seen about the driving, forgetting names, personality changes, everything you've seen.
Nancy, I want to talk a little bit about once you have that diagnosis, what are some of the things to do? I know there must just be this moment of freezing that could last for a long time, but if you're the caregiver, if you're the one that's going to be responsible, what are some of the things you should set in motion?
Once you get through the fog, the devastation of the diagnosis, you need to get organized. As the caregiver, you are now the person that is going to need to take over and handle, for example, everything from a financial perspective. Get organized. What credit cards are out there? What are your debts? Get passwords to all of your accounts. You know, your loved one may have passwords that he or she hasn't written down anywhere or has hidden somewhere. Make sure you know what those are. I have run into situations where there's erratic spending. Obviously, that can't go on. Possibly close credit card accounts and open new ones that have only your name on them.
Nancy, what happens if I have a loved one with Alzheimer's who, let's say, goes out and buys a Maserati and, you know, drives it home? What do I do?
What I would recommend doing is, as soon as you find out about it, go to the dealer or the retailer that sold your loved one the item and try and reverse the transaction. Try and return the item, and explain, you know, why, you know, that there is a health problem here.
We are going to take a break. We'll talk more about this once the diagnosis comes. What are the potential legal roadblocks to taking this action, and what legal help should you get to make sure that you're following the proper course when a diagnosis of Alzheimer's comes? Nancy Kiskis joining us in studio today from Wallace and Barnett. Susan Rode is our guest host. It is Minnesota Law presented by Wallace and Barnett. Minnesota Law Continues, presented by Moss and Barnett. Susan Rode is our host today, and joining us in studio, Moss and Barnett attorney Nancy Kiskis, and we are talking about dealing with the emotional and legal issues of Alzheimer's. If you have a question or a comment, feel free to call the program, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226.
Nancy, before the break, we were talking about some of the legal aspects of debts and credit card debt and loved ones buying things that they shouldn't be buying. What other kinds of issues with the finances would we want to be looking at right when we get that diagnosis?
Well, if your loved one is no longer able to work, I'd recommend that you talk to their employer, find out just exactly what benefits they might have. We were fortunate. My loved one's employer was very compassionate, and they were wonderful to work with. Check on health insurance coverage. See how long you could continue the coverage through your loved one's employer, or find out, you know, where you're going to get health insurance coverage. Look into Social Security benefits. Do you have disability coverage? If so, file a claim. Do you have long-term care insurance? Obviously, find out what the coverage is there. Look at your liability insurance coverage, particularly if your loved one is going to continue to drive for a while. Make sure you've got enough coverage. One interesting thing, check on your utility bills. If your name as the caregiver is not on the utility bill, the utility company will not talk to you. And so you need to make sure that you get your name on there so that if you do have a question or a concern about, you know, a utility bill or whatever, that you'll be able to talk with them directly.
Are there any potential landmines for people when they pursue this? Can there be legal roadblocks to pursuing any of these things, in your opinion? If this diagnosis comes for a loved one and you pursue this list of tasks, where are the roadblocks? Where are the potential landmines?
There are a lot of companies that will not speak to you, because even though you may tell them that your loved one has Alzheimer's and you're handling things for them, and that's why it becomes very important to get certain legal documents in place, one of which is a power of attorney. With a power of attorney, your loved one will give you the legal ability to handle financial affairs of all types, pay bills, collect assets, cancel some of those credit cards, sign contracts when necessary, and a power of attorney can help later on so that you can avoid a guardianship or a conservatorship court action at some time in the future.
Are these types of things, can they be done in advance of a diagnosis of a terrible illness like Alzheimer's? Is this something that married couples should consider in advance, setting up some of this framework?
Absolutely. This legal work needs to be done as soon as possible, especially once you receive the diagnosis of Alzheimer's, because you don't know how long your loved one is going to be competent to sign legal documents.
Along those lines, Becky in Shoreview joins us. Becky, you're on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Hello.
Hi. I do have a question about the power of attorney. My mom has early stages of Alzheimer's, and probably about 4 years ago, my sister and my brother were made power of attorneys. Unfortunately, last year, my brother passed away, so my sister is the only power of attorney on it. Now, we want to put another one of her children on as a power of attorney. Now, is that something my sister can do because she's power of attorney, or do we have to get my mom involved in this also?
The clearest and best way to go is to get your mother involved. Her attorney will be able to assess whether or not she is still competent and has enough understanding to be able to sign a new power of attorney. But that's absolutely the best way to go.
Nancy, is that something, though, that just married couples in general should do, just in case of a sudden debilitating illness, is that it should just be in place when you're perfectly healthy and happily married?
Yes. That's one of the tremendous freedoms that we have in this country, and that is to make an estate plan and take steps like this to make sure that our assets and our lives are managed properly and efficiently. And everyone should, in my opinion, sit down with an attorney and, as I say, get their affairs in order, get things like this in place, because we never know when there might be an illness or an accident.
And is putting things in joint names sufficient? Is that going to, you know, a lot of married couples have everything in both names and they think, well, we're protected.
Sometimes that's sufficient, but not in every case. It just depends on the particular circumstances.
What about, we hear a lot about health care directives. Is that something that you would do once the diagnosis is made, or is it something you could do before?
It's something that you can do at any time, but certainly if your loved one gets a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, a health care directive is absolutely imperative. With a health care directive, they can name the person that will step in as their health care agent to make decisions, health care decisions for them, and they can also express their wishes as to the care, the medical care that they will want later on.
Well, and medical care is a huge issue, and I'm sure caring for someone with Alzheimer's as the disease progresses can become more and more challenging and more financially challenging. Long-term health care insurance, can we talk a little bit about that? And is it a good idea for everyone to pursue that and take a look at that type of insurance?
Well, with any type of insurance, what you need to do is you need to consider the cost versus the benefit. Now, most people will never need long-term care, but if you're one of the few that someday you or your loved one do need long-term care, you will have wished at that point in time that you had the coverage. It's just like any type of insurance. I mean, you just never know whether you're going to need it, but it's certainly something to look into.
Nancy, what other kinds of benefits are available for someone with this diagnosis?
Benefits as far as?
Would there be Social Security benefits available? Or?
Potentially. And it's important that you check with, call your local Social Security office, tell them that you've received this diagnosis, and then find out whether you qualify under either the SSDI or the SSI program for some type of benefit.
Our phone number on the program, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. We've been on a hiatus for a while because of Gopher football. They'll play a little bit later today. Our pregame show beginning at 1:30, kickoff 2:30, Minnesota at Wisconsin. And, of course, Minnesota Law comes your way each and every Saturday at noon with the sports schedule permitting. Once again, our phone number is 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. Our guest attorney today, Nancy Kiskis from Moss and Barnett, and our host is Susan Rode, sitting in for Tom Schroyer today. We want to go to Lori in Minneapolis. Lori, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. I would like to find out, let us say that someone has had dementia for a number of years. And now, are they capable of entering into a reverse mortgage on their home or selling their home?
Well, what you're talking about is whether or not that person has the legal capacity to enter into a contract.
Right.
And so, you know, it depends. I mean, and that's an assessment that an attorney or your loved one's doctor could make as to whether or not they still have the legal capacity to enter into a contract. Now, if the decision is that they don't have that capacity, then that's where a power of attorney would come in and would be extremely helpful, because then the attorney, in fact, named on the power of attorney could step in and sign that contract for them.
Is there a concern, and I'm sure there is, that people can be taken advantage if you're dealing with a spouse or another loved one, an aunt, an uncle, a grandparent in this situation? But what if there's a friend or an acquaintance and you feel like they're being taken advantage of? What recourse is there if you're just a concerned citizen or friend?
Oh, I'm
sure that's very challenging.
It's a difficult situation. I mean, you could sit down, if you're close enough to this friend, you could sit down and talk to them, ask if they have if they've considered seeing a doctor, tell them about what you've noticed. Or you could talk with their spouse or with their child or whatever and see if they've noticed any of the same things. Chances are they have. And it's possible that they're already concerned and that they are already getting help for this friend.
Nancy, Susan, will the court get involved if they feel like someone's being taken advantage? What does the court stand on this if they feel like people are being mistreated or taken advantage of because maybe they have Alzheimer's or dementia or some sort of other medical issue?
You know, I think the first thing is it has to come to the attention of the court. Someone
sure.
has to bring it to the court's attention, which is not always as easy as it sounds. There are instances where people are out there, I think, certainly being taken advantage of, and it is not reported. But how would you report that if you knew that was happening to your neighbor, for example?
Well, there are departments at the state that basically deal with what we call vulnerable adults. But they are very hesitant to get involved, understandably, because there would be hundreds, if not thousands, of calls in. You know, you're talking about someone's civil rights and possibly restricting the way they live their life, and they may be perfectly happy the way they're living. So it's don't count on getting help there. You're much better off going to family and seeing if you can get help via a doctor or possibly a county social worker.
Now we go to Chris in Rosemont. Chris, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, this is a quick question, just clarification about the long-term care statement earlier. I don't know if it was Nancy or Susan that commented that most people will not use long-term care.
Yes.
Is that accurate?
I believe it is.
How do you...
Oh, I'm sorry, Chris.
How do you define long-term care?
I would define it as someone who needs care either in a care facility or someone who needs care that a family cannot provide. For example, they need in-home care. They need to go to a group home, like I say, a nursing home, that kind of thing.
And as you said, Nancy, it's one of those things that people need to weigh the cost and the benefit of a situation like that, like any other insurance plan.
Right.
Absolutely. We're going to take a break. We've got Jim coming up. We'll get back to Power of Attorney. By the way, our phone number on the program, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. 13 minutes now in front of 1 o'clock. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. Minnesota Law continues, presented by Moss and Barnett. Susan Rode is our host today, sitting in for Tom Schroyer and our special guest attorney, Nancy Kiskus from Moss and Barnett, dealing with the emotional and legal issues of Alzheimer's. We want to bring in Jim. Jim, thanks for the call. Hello. Jim, you're on the air.
Thank you. I have a question about power of attorney. Are power of attorney documents legal? Of the date that they were made. So if they were made 10 years ago and now something happens and you need to use them, do banks and other institutions have to honor those regardless of the date?
Yes. They don't get old or they don't need to be dated as of a certain time. A power of attorney is effective from the day it's signed, and it's effective until it's either revoked or the person giving the power of attorney dies. So, yes, the fact that it's 10 years old, if it has not been revoked, it is still effective.
Nancy, I'd like to go back. We started talking about estate planning. What kinds of things can you plan for with a will or other vehicles once you know someone has Alzheimer's?
Again, it's important to deal with and get the estate planning done as quickly as possible when you get the Alzheimer's diagnosis because competency later on becomes an issue. With a revocable trust, what you can do is it's another way to plan for disability because in a revocable trust, you have named trustees and successor trustees who can step in and handle your assets and handle your financial affairs efficiently, both during life and also upon death.
Are there any other things like that I should consider, any other vehicles? any other assets I should worry about protecting?
Yes, it's absolutely very important to take a look at the beneficiary designations that are in place on IRAs, 401k accounts, retirement accounts, life insurance policies. You want to make sure that those are not old, that they're current, and that they name exactly the beneficiaries that you want to name.
You know, in the last few minutes, Nancy, I'd like to turn to talking about the caregivers. And that's a big job. And sometimes it's with your parent or your husband, and sometimes it's a neighbor or a friend. It could be anyone, but it's a huge job no matter what. And can you talk a little bit about caregivers and some of the special challenges that a caregiver may have?
Yes. The focus when someone receives a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, the focus is naturally and, of course, on the person with the disease. However, the caregiver is under a tremendous amount of stress. And, in fact, what I have heard is that a caregiver is four times more likely to develop serious health problems themselves because of the additional stress they're under. I would recommend that as a caregiver, you try to stay positive, focus on the good things in your life. Don't isolate yourself. You're going to be overwhelmed with what needs to be done, but continue to see family and friends. Find a support group. They can be amazingly helpful. Consider seeing a therapist, or for help and for contacts and more information, you may want to contact the Alzheimer's Association.
And as I understand, that association is very active in Minnesota and can be very helpful to individuals.
Very active. I have contacted them many times myself, and their website is very helpful, too.
Nancy, another area I think that comes up with this diagnosis is sometimes not wanting to tell people about it, to wanting to sort of handle this problem on your own. But always it's important to get to your attorney as soon as possible. Is that right?
Absolutely. Take care of legal issues. Obviously very critical to get to a doctor and find a good doctor that this disease is progressive. And so you will need to take your loved one or your neighbor or your friend in to see the doctor periodically, annually, if not more often. Again, surround yourself with friends and family. When people say, geez, I'm so sorry, let me know if there's anything I can do to help, take them up on it. You know, say, yes, could you please take this person out to lunch one day? Give me a break, you know.
You know, several times today you mentioned if someone is competent to contract. What kinds of factors go into that?
It's a very subjective assessment that is made by an attorney or by a doctor. And what they consider are whether or not this person has an understanding of what they're being asked to sign or what they're being asked to do.
So there's no clear test to that at all?
No, there's not.
Well, our time has gone very quickly today. Nancy, a pleasure to meet you. Susan, always good to see you.
Good to see you, and I hope you're not in your Bermudas the next time we see each other, Steve.
Well, it would be great if it would warm up, but I have a feeling we have a few months of cold stuff.
I think so.
It'll be good to see you again soon. Susan Rode from Moss & Barnett, Nancy Kiskus from Moss & Barnett. This is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss & Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. We'll see you next Saturday and each and every Saturday at noon here on News Radio 830 WCCO.